Fred Film Radio.
Angelo Cerbi, Fred Film Radio. We are in Torino at the CU Sound Festival, and we're here with Mr. Tony Palmer. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
You are here as a jury, and the festival gives a tribute to your work. And so I would like to talk about your work a little bit, of course.
I don't know anything about my work.
Well, we should make something up, you know.
Fiction department.
Fiction department, exactly. I mean, your professional life linked strongly music and film together. How did it start?
Well, I mean, only 50% of my films are about music. That's a lot of films, I know. And music, obviously, is in my DNA, as we would say. I'm not sure that film is in my DNA, but music certainly is. And I became obsessed from a very early time. I mean, my life began as an academic. I thought I was going to be an academic, and I think I kind of got vaguely seduced into working in cinema, because I don't know why, but I did. Anyway, the first film I ever made was about the British composer Benjamin Britten, and I had a very good editor, film editor, except I was a nightmare, because I was saying, no, change this, put it here, put that there, this there, and I was constantly like that. And he said, right, next film, you are going to edit it, and I will help you so you don't get lost. How about that? Is that a deal? So I said, sure. So second film, which was All My Loving, which is one of the films we're showing here, I began to edit it. Now, today, I'm a very, very fast editor. Mm-hmm. Maybe not very good, but I'm very fast. I mean, I can edit a two-hour film in 2 weeks without any trouble at all. I only say that because when I was now for my first film that I'm editing myself, All My Loving, after 6 weeks with very good material, I was making a complete mess of it. I mean, an absolute mess. It was a disaster. And so the editor, same guy that I'd worked with before, said, listen, what we're going to do, that we take 1 week, we'll do nothing. Go away, sit on the beach, think beautiful. Whatever. Find a pretty girl, do anything, don't think about it. And then we'll come back after a week and probably then we'll have another go. The date is important. It was, this is the beginning of May 1968. So we stopped, and then the following day there was a new film which had just opened in London in the Cinerama Cinema called 2001. So I went to the 2 o'clock screening. Then I went to the 5 o'clock screening, and then I went to the 8 o'clock screening. And the following day, I was back 2 o'clock, 5 o'clock, 8 o'clock. I must have seen it 20 times.
Which movie was that?
2001.
Oh, sorry.
2001.
Sorry, okay, yeah.
And it was an absolute revelation. I mean, it's a work of genius. But that apart, the thing that really hit me very hard was the first 29 minutes when nobody says a word. It's just music and just images, but you don't get lost.
Oh no, and you're hooked.
You're hooked. You know what the story is. You can see what's going on, but nobody says a word. Not a word. And I just thought, that's it. That you can tell a story through music and through images only. You know, sometimes you need dialogue, but I mean, for the most part, you know, the music becomes part of the narrative of the film. Mm-hmm. So, with this in mind, back I go to finish All My Loving, and we started from the beginning again, and in 7 days it was finished. The film that you see, we took 7 days to edit it. It was edited at tremendous speed, because it was now absolutely clear to me that I had to think, what music am I going to use? What images am I going to use? And that's the story.
Yeah, you didn't need to find anything narrative in it.
No, absolutely not. No, the narrative would develop of its own accord. What you didn't need was somebody who told you what to think. I mean, which is the standard television documentary, standard documentary anyway, but particularly television. And, I mean, that I hate. And from that moment on, I've never used narration in any film ever. I mean, one of the other films that we're showing, the Leonard Cohen film, is an hour and 45 minutes long. It's no narration. Now, you will tell me that, you know, when you see the film, you'll get totally confused. I don't think so. I mean, you'll be able to follow the film and follow what's happening to Leonard, because nobody says anything. Yeah. I'm relying on the image of him and other things, and the music he's singing and other things.
Just talking about All My Love, and your film is... We know what it is about. It's like the music, 1968. Now, there is a movie out in this theater called My Generation by Michael Caine. And your movie seems to be like the twin brother of this one, because it's about the same age, the same era. That was very special. What made that era so special? Maybe it is special for us now, but it was special back then, too.
Well, it's a very interesting question, because we, all of us, think that the time of our youth was golden. You know, the summers were hot, there was snow at winter time, it was all perfect. And of course, we think the music of our youth when we were growing up, that's the best music that's ever been written, etc., etc., etc. Now, I do think, even keeping that in mind, that the music between early 1966 through to about 1970 was absolutely extraordinary. I mean, it was extraordinary. It was an extraordinary moment in popular culture, not just music, but in popular culture generally.
Yeah.
There are so many explanations that you could make. Oh, youth had money. Youth suddenly had freedom. There was the Vietnam War, which of course galvanized opinion. But in the end, I think it has no explanation. I mean, why was it in Paris after the First World War that there was huge cultural uplift? Why was it in Berlin immediately before the Nazis? There was huge, it was a sense of excitement. Why was it in the decade before the First World War? Again, in Paris, as it happened, but with all the Russians coming, you know, the Ballet Russe and Diaghilev and Stravinsky and so on and so on. You know, there is no logical explanation for any of this. It just happens. And when it happens, you know, you've got to go with it. I mean, you can't ignore it, nor should you ignore it. But you've just got to go with it and try and... And my job as a filmmaker, as it were, was to try and record it. Because I knew that... I just sensed that there was something special about this time, and it was my job, although I was a beginner. I mean, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. I was a beginner. It was my job to...
Everybody was.
Everybody was, yeah. Everybody was.
And also,
No, well, possibly, but there was also a sense of freedom. I mean, you didn't... The Leonard Cohen film, for example... Leonard himself asked me to make the film, or his manager asked me to make the film, for one reason, that Leonard Cohen did not know that at the time that we planned the film, which was the end of 1971, his record company was not going to renew his contract because his records did not sell. Leonard had told the manager that this was it. He would do this tour because he promised to do it in the spring of 1972. But that was it. He was never going to tour again. He didn't enjoy it. He was not a parrot. He was a poet. So if you were a manager of an artist who didn't want to tour and had no record contract, that was suicide commercially. Absolutely. Hence the film. They wanted a film. They thought, if everything goes, at least we've got a film. The advantage for us was that we arrived to do the film, and luckily Leonard and I got on very well, but there were no record executives, there were no PR people, there was nobody there. I mean, just Leonard, his band, me, tiny film crew, stage crew, that was it. So we had, as it were, access all areas, but we didn't ask for it. It was just the coincidence of the fact that he didn't have a record contract, so we weren't being pursued by these dreadful record executive people.
When you work on a fiction film and you work on a documentary, which is the approach you have to the material, and what makes you choose one way or the other?
Well, sometimes, I mean, we don't have a choice. I mean, the other film we're showing here about Shostakovich, that did start life as a documentary. And it became very clear to me that the Russians, who had all the documentary material about Shostakovich, were not going to give me the material if we didn't sign a piece of paper which said, you will tell the true communist story about the true communist son, Dmitri Shostakovich. And I realized that I couldn't do that because it wasn't truthful. And so I thought, well, I can't make a documentary, but I haven't got any film of Shostakovich playing or conducting or whatever. So that forced me towards making a feature film where, of course, it's fiction. We don't know for certain. It's pretty accurate, factually, but we don't know for certain what Stalin said to Shostakovich. We had to invent all of that. But if you just take that one scene between Stalin and Shostakovich, I think that that's as near to the truth about what really happened to Shostakovich as anything. I mean, there's one point where Stalin looks at the top of the head of Shostakovich and says, the actor, or Stalin character, says, "Where do they come from? All these noises in your head." Meaning, if I could find out where they came from, I could control them. Exactly.
And how were the Russians towards the movie?
Oh, they hated it. Not only they hated it at the time, I mean, we're talking about 1968, they not only hated it, they tried to stop it. I mean, it opened the London Film Festival, and the lawyers for the Russian embassy, they actually turned up at the door of the cinema with a writ to prevent it being shown. And the cinema owner said, "I can't speak Russian." I think the writ was in English, but he made a big show. "I can't speak Russian. I'm not having anything to do with you. Go away." So, I mean, and he was warned that this might happen. But, I mean, they did their very best to stop the film. And for years, they stopped it. I mean, they stopped it in the Soviet Union. They couldn't stop it anywhere else. But it was touch and go, and it wasn't until I went to work in 1997, so that's 10 years later, and I went to work at the Mariinsky Theatre in St. Petersburg with the conductor Valery Gergiev, and Gergiev had seen the film, and he said, "We're going to have a big screening here in St. Petersburg." And I said, "Valery, you can't do that." "Well, why not?" He said, "Well, you know, an English director making a film about St. Petersburg's greatest composer in front of a Russian audience, you're joking." He said, "I will go on stage and I will announce it so they wouldn't dare stop me," if you see what I mean, which is exactly what happened.
You made a lot of movies about single persons, like Benjamin Britten on Stravinsky and Leonard Cohen, yeah, we were talking. Did you have any kind of special approach for each one of them based on the differences of the personalities?
Well, of course, they're all different. But, I mean, there are two ways to answer that. The first is that if I'm making a film about a composer, but, I mean, I've also made films about dancers and so on and so on, and singers like Maria Callas. What I'm interested in is really two things. One, not so important, which is, what are they trying to tell me? Because they are trying to tell me something. They're not just marionettes on the stage. And secondly, somebody said to me not so long ago, actually, what you made a film with Maria Callas and you made a film with John Lennon. What have those two people possibly got in common, other than the fact they're both musicians? The answer is very simple: courage. They had either physical courage or emotional courage or intellectual courage or psychological courage. Courage. It's something phenomenal. You know, those people have something that we have not. So we look up to them, not because of what they did, but because of who they are. Mm. So I'm attracted to people who exhibit that kind of courage. So that's part of the answer. But the other part really is that if it's a composer, you know, I will listen to the music, I mean, a thousand times. I mean, I could, at the time I'm making the film, I could probably sing the entire works of Shostakovich backwards, if you see what I mean. I knew it so well. But the process that you make the film, I mean, I never start with a script. I'm talking about documentaries now. Because if I could write down what this film is about, why bother to make the film? So each film is a kind of journey of exploration. I'm trying to find out things. And the more I find out, the more interesting and curious it becomes. So I can write the script of my film at the end. I can say, this film is about, but I wouldn't know that at the beginning.
Yeah, but is the film telling you what it's about? It's not you telling... Well, it's half and half.
It's partly me, because I'm making the film. But I mean, what I try to do with the audience, especially, I mean, with Maria Callas, for example, is this is the evidence that I have found about what went wrong in her life. I mean, the Maria Callas film is a very, for this purpose, a very good example. This is a film, this is not a film about an opera singer. Oh, and by the way, she's a woman in a mess. This is a film about a woman in a hell of a mess. Oh, and by the way, she's an opera singer, if you see what I mean. It was the people that I'm, it was the people that I'm attracted to, the person that I'm attracted to. But again, I didn't know that when I began to make the film with Maria Callas. I just thought, Maria Callas, extraordinary woman, something wrong with her voice. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to find out if I can. And then, of course, I found out. I found out all the problems that she had had and continued to have.
Lately, in the last, like, 5 years, cinemas have shown many musicals. Musicals is getting big again. Yeah, it's a comeback, a fantastic comeback. What do you think is that makes the musicals come back so strongly lately?
Well, most of the great musicals that I think you're referring to were essentially films of stage musicals. Mm-hmm. Sound of Music, for example. Oklahoma. I mean, Oklahoma, I think, is a great, great musical. I mean, perhaps the greatest musical of its kind, West Side Story.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the films are wonderful as well, particularly West Side Story is wonderful, but they were films of existing stage shows. And I think the great stage shows finally ran out of steam. I'm not against the works of Andrew Lloyd Webber, but the film of Phantom of the Opera is terrible compared with on the stage. The film of Cats is terrible compared with what you saw on the stage. So, and probably worst of all, is the film of... no, I don't want to go on. I'm being cruel. But but it just that tradition just absolutely ran out of gas. Mm-hmm. Basically, I was exhausted. So there had to be a moment of pause, and then there had to be a moment of reinvention. And I think, for example, La La Land, although there are things about La La Land I don't like, I mean, that's a musical, and a wonderful musical, and quite rightly was appraised in the way it was. Simply, they started from scratch and said, we've got this story, it clearly devolves around a jazz pianist and this unemployed actress and so on and so on. Let's see where this takes us in developing the script. Let's see where this takes us. So that's a new tradition. Mm-hmm. And the trouble with La La Land is that it's almost impossible to imitate because it's so good. It really is very, very good. So, I mean, poor filmmakers in that genre, I'm not in that genre, but in that genre are stuck. I'm going to be compared with La La Land, as it were. So, but I think that's why the tradition essentially changed. Okay. It was no longer films of stage musicals. Nobody's making film of stage musical anymore. I mean, I think even if Andrew Lloyd Webber wrote a work of supreme genius, I think this is unlikely, but even if he did, nobody would want to film it. I mean, the biggest disaster of all, I think, was Pink Floyd believing that The Wall could be turned into a film. Can't. And I mean, he was a great friend of mine, and I made a film with him. Tommy, I think, is an appalling film. Absolutely, it's got wonderful, wonderful strokes of genius. I mean, Pinball Wizard with Elton John, Tina Turner, and Acid Queen. Those are incredible sequences. But the film, on the whole, is as weak as the story is weak.
Did you ever think about making a musical yourself? Like
I'm not good enough. I mean, I would always want... I would go back from it because I would think that I wouldn't know how to. I mean, I've always wanted to make Star Wars, but I wouldn't know how to, if you see what I mean. I mean, I'm just... I'm not sure what I'm good at, but that I'm definitely not good at.
You know what you're talking about.
Yes, and that's, you know... I think that's the real answer. I think I would... I would not be... be good enough.
Well, Mr. Palmer, you were very nice talking to us. Thank you very much. I'm Angela Cerbi with Tony Palmer from the CU Sound Festival in Torino for Fred Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.